Across the country lately, millions of people are marching for their rights. But this chanting you're hearing now is from a different generation. This is From the Vault Remixed, a weekly program presented by the Pacifica Radio Archives. I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the archive. Each week, we pick a subject, sometimes date-specific, sometimes seemingly random, and we go through the Pacifica Radio Archives vault, the largest of its kind in the country, and pull out the best programs possible and remix them into something we hope you'll come to look forward to, set your watches by, or grab the whole family and listen. Listen to the power of radio. This week, we look at the 1979 March on Washington for Gay and Lesbian Rights.
Sunday, October 14th, 1979. For millions of Americans and the national media, it was just another news day. But for hundreds of thousands of lesbians, gay men, and their friends, October 14th, 1979 was the date of the National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights, the first such event in American history. On that day, thousands of people from all over the country converged on the nation's capital to march past the White House and to gather together at the Washington Monument for a rally of mutual support and celebration. In the spirit of significant past marches in the nation's capital, lesbians and gay men came to Washington in astonishing numbers to demonstrate to lawmakers and to the national press that the growing lesbian and gay movement for human rights and human dignity in the 1970s would continue to be a major social and political force in the 1980s.
What we really want to do with this march is build a national consciousness around gay oppression. Freedom is never given to anybody, and unless we continue in our effort without putting our energy and our direction into a further action, a further effort, we will not get our freedom because nobody's going to give it to us.
We shall.
The march didn't just happen, though. Like all great things, it first germinated as an idea in someone's head. But today there is some controversy over who first had the idea. Ray Hill, who is the lead organizer of the event, says Harvey Milk first came up with the idea in 1976. Harvey Milk later became the first elected gay official in the country, elected to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors in 1977.
The conference that did call for the march happened in Philadelphia, and it happened in Independence Hall on Quaker turf, and that happened in February of 1979. Among those people that were present but not supporting the march was Troy Perry. And I've known Troy Perry since 68. So Troy and I are old friends, and Troy was just opposed to the march. The name Robin Tyler, in relationship to the National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights in 1979, did not appear until Troy had a heart-to-heart talk with God and changed his position on the march and said he would support the march and lead a train from Los Angeles across the country, gathering march participants along the way. And part of that was contingent that we put Robin Tyler in a position of being on the podium with me as co-moderator of the rally at the end of the march. And that's the first time Robin Tyler's name appeared in relationship to that march. And that's just the facts.
But Robin Tyler, a lesbian comedienne, claims the idea first came to her while on stage in Minnesota.
I was doing a benefit in St. Paul when they had the referendum there. And I made a joke. The joke was going to be, I think we should march on Washington. We'll set up tents. We know how gay men love camping. Well, it got such a huge applause, I think we should march on Washington, that I said, well, I'm not going to do the rest of the joke. It's got this applause. So they formed the Minnesota Committee for the March on Washington, and then Harvey picked it up in San Francisco.
I called for that march on the Day of Freedom in Washington, D.C., on the same spot where over a decade ago, Dr. Martin Luther King said, I have a dream that is fading.
Today, the question of who first had the idea may be irrelevant. The important thing is that people, including both Harvey Milk and Robin Tyler, acted on the idea. But not all gays and lesbians thought it was wise at first. Around the country, groups met to discuss whether or not a march was a good idea. There was debate around the effectiveness of a march if the turnout was not enormous. The gay and lesbian community did not want to put together something of this scale and have a small turnout, which they argued would hurt their cause more than help. One of those who argued against it was Ray Hill. But Harvey Milk convinced him it was the only way to truly show the country that they were a minority population of the country that should be treated with the same rights as other minorities. But then, in the middle of this debate, tragedy struck.
At 11 a.m. this morning, San Francisco Mayor George Moscone and City Supervisor Harvey Milk were shot and killed in their City Hall offices. Board of Supervisors Dianne Feinstein, who now becomes acting mayor of San Francisco, made the announcement to a stunned group in City Hall.
As president of the Board of Supervisors, it's my duty to make this announcement. Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed. The suspect is Supervisor Dan White.
Thousands of quiet mourners have brought flowers for Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk to the steps of City Hall. For Pacifica in Berkeley, this is Lily Franklin.
In reports on that day, the emphasis was placed on Mayor Moscone's death, but it quickly became apparent that the death of Harvey Milk would be more significant historically. Milk was a hero in the gay and lesbian community because of his being elected to office, but also because he was so confident in coming out, and he encouraged all gays and lesbians to come out, saying their fight for civil rights would only be possible if their life was made public. And with his death, he instantly became a martyr. His death motivated people around the country to participate in the fight for gay rights, and undoubtedly helped inch many people closer to coming out. He famously said in one of his attempts to encourage people to come out, "Rights are not won on paper. They are won only by those who make their voices heard." The debate that had taken place about how effective a march would be if there was a small turnout had instigated gay rights groups across the country to organize train and bus trips to the Capitol. These trips were in some instances a multi-day traveling celebration.
The question of the day is, are you going to Washington, D.C.?
If I have to walk on my hands to Washington, I'm going to be there.
Holla, bro!
The mood was festive aboard the Amtrak Freedom Train as it left the Oakland, California terminal, carrying some 75 lesbians and gay men to Sunday's National March on Washington for lesbian and gay rights.
The journey on the train has superseded my expectations many times over. I really am enjoying the sense of community, as short-lived a community as it will be, just, you know, less than a week.
I can't say the word. I don't know the word to say. It's been wonderful.
What's your name?
Dennis.
How long have you been working the railroad, Dennis?
Oh, about 30 years.
Is this going to be a trip you're going to remember?
Oh, I'll remember this trip for real. I never will forget this trip.
What is really exciting is that there are committees working in 49 of the 50 states.
Los Angeles March Committee organizer Susan McGreevy spent the last few weeks before the march working out of the Washington, D.C. office.
The only state that is not covered at this point is Nevada. The march has caught the imagination, I think, of a lot of people in the country.
I like the political interaction between the men and women. I'm real impressed with that. I'm seeing more and more of it, and I'm real involved in politics, and it's nice to be able to talk to men about politics.
Only thing I can say, I haven't slept much on this whole trip. I think we're probably all excited enough to where it is not bothering us that we haven't slept for 2 days now.
Dallas, Texas has 20 billboards going up there and in Austin, and they're taking some of those billboards away from fundamentalist religious groups, and they have even organized vigilante committees to make sure that they are not defaced in any way.
I appreciate the fact that we're not alone on this train, as we are not alone in the rest of the world. We have to talk to these people, and that's why we're going to Washington.
Jesse, is there anything you can compare this crowd to in your experience on the train?
A lovely, lovely crowd. I had some nice crowds, but this is the most loveliest crowd I've had.
How long have you been working on the railroad?
31 years. Still, people got nothing but compliments from all other people. Looks like you made that trip more happy.
The eyes open more now, I guess.
There's an old line communist on the train, and there's a Bircher who thinks the metric system is a communist conspiracy. We've had a chance to talk to all of those people, and that's what it was all about.
It was like one big family, and I didn't expect that. Because I'm not out that much, I didn't know what to expect, really. But it's like everybody knows each other, and it's a great feeling. I love it.
We are coming, heaven knows where we are going. We'll know we're there. We will get there. Heaven knows how we will get there. We know we will.
This collage came from a documentary produced at Pacifica Radio immediately after the march. Remember, though, this is 1979, and not all of the country took the gay movement as welcome news. In Utah, some writers had the dubious honor of meeting Reverend Robert L. Harris, the first black elected official in that state.
The power of God is against you, devil. We don't appreciate you being here.
October 11, early Thursday morning, Ogden, Utah.
This is worse. This is the worst sin in the Bible.
What is this?
God's going to have somebody that's going to tell you devil the truth.
What is this?
Oh, yeah. Well, you
need the verse in Scripture.
You read the Bible.
I have read the Bible. I've read Romans 1, 26 through 28, 1 Corinthians 6, 9, 1 Timothy 1, 9 through 10. Listen, it was destroyed because God couldn't find 10 righteous people in it, period. That's what the Scriptures say. Nothing to do with homosexuality.
Homosexuality is the worst sin in the Bible. It's worse than the Bible. Like I say, I love you devils, but I'm going to tell you the truth, see. God is not pleased with you, see. And you know, most people don't have enough guts. Most preachers don't have enough guts. I surely admire Oneida Bryant. Most people don't have enough guts. I really admire her. Most people don't have enough guts to tell you crooks the truth, see. But this is the only religious state that's headed by officials in the country. We definitely don't appreciate you coming here.
Well, we're on our way to Washington, D.C. to demand our rights, and we're going to Washington.
You have no rights.
Yes, we do.
You have no rights.
There was a time when you were told as a black you didn't have rights.
You have no rights. You have no rights.
You're a black George Washington.
You have no rights.
We do.
The only rights you have is to turn to the Lord. The power of God's against you. My name is Reverend Robert L. Harris.
Mighty right.
I go looking for that. I'm the first black elected official in Utah, the only one.
We heard you had planned to throw yourself on the tracks. Is that something that you still plan to do, that they're going to allow you to do?
I've already done it. I laid on the tracks, yes.
Did they ask you to leave or anything?
No, they didn't know. This is a religious state. They appreciate me doing something like this.
You did it as a gesture. I mean, you're not going to threaten your life by the train, are you?
No, I'm not going to threaten my life. I just doing this to let them know we don't appreciate them being here. God is against you.
You have homosexuality.
The power of God is against you.
It goes without saying, the party on the train did not end because of the men and women along the way who protested the train's passengers. More than likely, it fueled that energy on board. The party lasted for a couple days as the train meandered across the country. Then on Saturday, the train pulled into Washington, D.C.
The Freedom Train has just arrived this moment, and the passengers are about to disembark, and here they are.
We just finished coming across the country on what we called Amtrash.
Saturday night, October 13th, the Sylvan Theater, Washington, D.C.
At the Sylvan Theater in D.C., on the eve of the march organizers put together a show as part of the events going on that weekend.
People that are going to be on this show are going to be out of the closet, lesbian and gay entertainers only.
Come out of the closet and love me. Come out of the closet, be free. Come out of the closet. Come. I know it's so dark in there. So come out with a scream and shout and see everybody everywhere.
We can get our sisters and brothers on the streets of Washington saying that we are everywhere. We are together. We're gay. We're proud. We're strong, and this year is the year.
We cannot have people come to this country on visas. We are kicked by police. We have no employment rights. You can be put in jail for holding hands with your lovers in practically half the states of the United States.
It's time we recognize that this is a national issue. It has got national support.
We know politicians talk out of both sides of their mouths. And we want to know what they're going to do this year, not next year with promises.
We are going to assure them of their civil rights and of their human rights because we are going to save our children.
In 1969, outside the Stonewall Bar in New York City, for the first time in America, gay men and women demonstrated in the streets for their human rights. In the 10 years since the Stonewall riots, lesbians and gay men have fought to end the ignorance and discrimination surrounding homosexuality. But many Americans still oppose this effort, some with a Bible, others with violence. And this is what brings hundreds of thousands of gay men and women to the mall today in Washington, D.C. They've come from all across the nation, and many from abroad, to march from the Capitol building, march up Pennsylvania Avenue to the White House, and finally turning south to gather here by the Washington Monument. And many more gay men and women who cannot be with us in Washington today will be able to hear the voices of gay liberation in this national broadcast. And now, from the Washington Monument in our nation's capital, we bring you the rally at the National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights.
And welcome to the rally. I'm Moira Rankin from the Soap and
Wonderful time.
So nice to see a whole bunch of dykes.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. I feel so supported. It's so so much a part of this.
You know, somebody said last night at the concert that there's like really two cultures here, gay men and gay women, and they're very, very different. There needs to be respect for the differences. Do you feel that way?
I feel that way, and I feel like there is respect here. There's been no antagonism that I can possibly see at all.
I think everybody's so happy that so many people turned out that everybody thinks it's a miracle and they're just celebrating together.
Okay, Dale, do you want to add for the national audience? You want to say hi, Mom?
Hello, Mother.
Hi, Mom.
Thank you very much. This is Amy Sands and David Winyard.
Bread and water, like some poor man's daughter, no, never for me. Wine and money, call me honey, and made me feel I was free. Like a glass raised too many times, I broke in two, sing it. I was walking around in new pieces.
The march was peaceful and described by all participants as a tremendous success. There were some arrests, but not for violence. Reporter David Myers interviewed one man whose celebration ended abruptly.
We're talking here to Brett Booth, who participated in the march on Washington today, and he was in his uniform and was arrested. Can you tell us about that, Brett?
Yeah, I was marching down through the watch, through the march, and from behind, a military police patrol had grabbed a hold of me and pulled me out of the march and took me down to the station.
And you were incarcerated at that point, I guess.
Exactly.
Did they actually put you in jail then?
Yes, they did. They slapped the handcuffs on when I got to the vehicle, and they kept the handcuffs on. I had to submit to a full search. And they put me behind a cage, not behind bars, but behind a cage. And I sat there by myself for about an hour while they were processing all the papers and legalities and whatnot.
David Myers then asked the sailor about life in the Navy, and it bore little similarity to the Village People song.
Do you find much hostility in the services towards gay people then?
Very much so. At my command, well, 2 months ago, I was stationed on a ship, and because the ship found out that I was gay, I had 17 verbal threats and about 27 physical threats, attempts on my life, to put me over the side while the ship was underway. And the ship had left for the Mediterranean. And so the captain realized what was going on, and so he stationed me on the base rather than staying on the ship because he knew that I was going to go over if I took the trip over there.
So your life was actually threatened then?
Definitely. Too many times. It's very scary. Very, very shaky. But I've coped with it for this long. And I feel now that I have even more things to fight for at a stronger point of view. And I've got people to back me up and people to help me. And like I said before, I'll fight to the top.
Reporter David Myers was able to briefly interview Kevin Muller, who is one of the event organizers and who had gone to the jail to look after the arrested sailor.
I was flabbergasted. I've been involved in this 12 hours a day, 7 days a week for at least 5 months. I always believed in it. And I'm the outpouring, the people, the emotions just overwhelmed me. At one point, I was introducing the various groups as they came down the street, and I had to stop because I just had tears in my eyes. It was just I couldn't even talk. I think it's important to bring out that this was not just a local endeavor. We had representatives from all of our states, from 21 countries. I met 4 women who came in from New Zealand just for the demonstration. I met some women from Adak, Alaska. Now, Adak, Alaska is in the Aleutian Islands, and it is 90 miles from Soviet Russia. So that's not exactly around the corner. The people were very well behaved. We had no problems. The only incident was the reason we're here, was Brett's arrest. But I'm just so thrilled, and from what I've heard, there are plans for another march on Washington. I'll be very happy one day when we don't have to have a march anywhere. But we are everywhere, and I think the most important thing about today's demonstration, and this must be brought out, is that we are everywhere. Traditionally in this country, when gay things happen, gay news happens, it's just in New York or California or the larger metropolis areas. But we had representatives from little towns we never knew existed. We are everywhere, and we're a politically active group.
The arrests were not the only controversy of the day. After the march, there was a contentious debate regarding the official count of the march. Estimates ranged from the ridiculous at 25,000 to the impressive at 250,000. Unfortunately, the 250,000 count was announced after someone overheard a police officer say, while pointing to the Washington Mall, "There must be 250,000 fags out there." In the end, the final number was estimated at 80,000. And finally, let's hear a cross-section of voices from that historic day, nearly 30 years ago.
In San Francisco, when they sentenced Dan White to 7 years, our brothers and our sisters got on the streets to express their grief and their outrage, and they burned a couple of police cars, and they dared to call us violent. Well, they don't have to tell us about violence because they have violated us since the beginning of time.
I come from an organization where in the last 5 years, 12 of our churches have been arson and burned down to the ground. In one case, our minister and 10 of our church members were burned to death because of oppression, because of arson. When I hear people like Anita Bryant and Jerry Farwell from Lynchburg, Virginia, I think that town is aptly named, it really bothers me. People who claim the name of God, shame on you, you hypocrites. Let me tell you now, you don't know God. You couldn't possibly know God. I'm telling you today as gay men and gay women, as we gather here on the Mall, we can have our victory. We can have our power. We have it already. We don't owe apologies to anyone in America. Not anymore. We're here to let Americans know we're your sons, your daughters. We're not going away. We're here, and we're going to have our civil rights no matter what. It's for us.
We really threaten uptight America because one of the most effective ways to control people is through sex, through shame, through guilt. Remember it. We are the agents of one of the most important social transformations that has ever taken place since the beginning of patriarchy. But don't forget, we're outlaws. It's our great advantage, that's why I recommend it to you. We are the only minority group also that you can join overnight. In the twinkling of an eye, in fact. We dared to know pleasure. May I say pleasure again? I don't think it's been mentioned much today. Fellow criminals, never forget your nights in the days of your fighting for their freedom. Remember this experience. It is the tenderest, finest moment of our lives. So keep loving, keep making love, and soon there will be enough. Thank you.
The real irony of the National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights was that it both fulfilled and fell short of everyone's expectations. Those who warned that the age of apathy could not be overcome were surprised by the thousands of people who came from all over the country. Those who imagined that the march's success would advance the lesbian and gay liberation movement to a position of real power were surprised to discover that the impact of any event is determined by the significance granted it by the mass media. Thus is history reported and recorded. If a tree falls in the forest with no one to hear, does it make a sound?
You've been listening to From the Vault Remixed, a weekly program produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives. For more information on this program, or to find information on how to purchase a copy of this program or any of the archived materials that were used within this week's program, go online at fromthevaultradio.org or call the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. That's fromthevaultradio.org or 800-735-0230. From the Vault is produced, written, and edited by Christopher Sprinkle. Senior producer is Mark Torres, production coordinator Edgar Toledo, outreach by Sean Dulles. Our theme music is courtesy of Los Angeles-based Parallel. For more information on Parallel or other music used within this week's program, please visit fromthevaultradio.org. This program was executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and myself. I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening.
Like a picture of time. Well, he was the mother of America. He was my self-determined guru. Myself, well, I hold your big fat heart in my hand. I hold your bleeding hammer in my hands, a supernova, a flame on fire, shining in the darkness. Did someone mention I turn to think of you, who walk the way with so much pain, who holds the mirror up to fools, and I'll murder the ingrate.
Steve, a blind man from Arizona, was separated from his state contingent. He is behind the stage. Will someone from his state contingent come and be with Steve? Let us not leave this man alone. All right? How many people feel good today? I wish they'd take the roof off of this thing because you've got the sunshine and we all need it.
That is our guest this week, Ray Hill, making an announcement at the historic Gay and Lesbian March on Washington in 1979. This week, we invited Ray, a man who is a bona fide legend in the gay rights movement, whose accomplishments include founding the Houston Human Rights League, the Houston Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus, the Wildenstein Radio Show, which was one of the first regularly scheduled gay and lesbian programs in the country, and the only one in the South in the 1970s. He was the author of the first Safe Sex pamphlet in the country to prevent the spread of HIV, and he was the chair of the executive and coordinating committees for the March on Washington for Gay and Lesbian Rights back in 1979, among many, many other things. And a little FYI on his website bio, it also mentions he is currently unattached and reasonably available. Not exactly sure what that means, but if you're curious or bi-curious, you can read more about Ray at rayhill.info. Ray chose to hear the audio from a meeting he was at with Harvey Milk, the slain gay politician from San Francisco, who was voted one of the 100 most important people of the 20th century by Time magazine, Howard Wallace, a longtime peace activist, union organizer, and gay rights activist, and David Lamble, a gay rights activist and journalist who recorded the meeting. A couple of days ago, From the Vault producer Christopher Sprinkle talked to Ray about how the meeting came about.
I was there 30 years ago, and one does not easily forget conversations one had in 1978 with Harvey Milk, because that was the last year he was here, and he was such a significant figure in gay and lesbian history that for me, I have gone back over those memories a thousand times, because it was certainly significant in my career as an activist. Harvey had been invited to Dallas to be the keynote speaker at a Texas Gay Task Force conference, and I was invited up from Houston to do a series of workshops on how to deal with the media. And so we were both kind of conference honchos, and that meant, this is Dallas, remember, that we each had separate limousines and drivers to carry us around. And so Harvey grabbed me in the hall and said, look, I want you to support this March on Washington that I am planning for the 10th anniversary of Stonewall. And I said, well, I have some reservations about that. And he said, well, let's sit down and see if we can iron out your concerns. And so Dave Lamble was around, and I had known Dave from his radio days in commercial radio in Houston. And Dave said, well, why don't we go over to my place? We couldn't ride in the same limousine because these are Dallas Queens putting on Dallas Queen Airs. And so we each had to take our separate limousines to Dave's, which fortunately wasn't too far away, and went over there and went into Dave's house. And it was Dave Lamble, Howard Wallace of the AFL-CIO San Francisco, the gay union guy, and myself with Harvey Milk. And first, Harvey and I squared off on the issue of the march. That didn't take more than 15 minutes because I had an idea that going a march on Washington was going to be extremely expensive in terms of transportation cost and out-of-town hotel rooms. And I said, this thing's going to cost millions of dollars if it's any way at all successful. And we could much cheaper accomplish nearly the same thing if we had a National Lesbian and Gay Rights Congress, elect delegates from every city. And he said, well, how can you do that? These people are at war with each other in every one of these cities. And I said, well, you have some kind of independent agents, call a conference. And I was doing just that in Houston. We had Houston Town Meeting 1 as an example that it could be done, where even there were warring tribes get together under a common roof and elect delegates and then send those to the Congress. But Harvey convinced me that there wasn't enough focus nationally to do that, and it would be far to our advantage to have a march on Washington.
And now we hear this meeting recorded in 1978 in David Lample's kitchen in Dallas, Texas.
To other people at large, because we are a form of target practice for the ultra-right. They are going to build their ranks. We can guarantee one thing, that the ultra-right is going to be stronger in terms of hardcore fanatics by November. We will probably also be much stronger in terms of hardcore. There's a polarization.
I don't call it the ultra-right. I call it the third right.
Third right.
Okay. That's a bad pun, but
it does have this difference from the McCarthy period and from the right-wing reaction in the 60s. They never had a real hold on youth. They never had a real mass movement in either of those periods. I lived through the McCarthy period. I guess Harvey did, too. There was never that kind of activism. There was never that kind of activism. I was political then in high school. And now with religious fundamentalism, they're able to attract sectors of the population into a mass movement for the first time. And that's really just what distinguishes fascism. It's not a right-wing. Every right-wing dictatorship is not fascist.
Well, California is a very conservative political theater to fight in. Ronald Reagan has done his coalitions out there for a long time, and the Republican Party, in its most conservative manifestation, is given its birth in California. Now, let's, rhetoric aside, let us look at this analytically and see what kind of serious political problem are we facing there. Is there any hope?
Yes. Let's relate to Texas, because it's easy to understand. The estimates I hear of as high as the potentially of 1 million people in Texas are gay. Mm-hmm. Let's say there's only 500,000. Right. What's the total population of Texas?
13 million.
If every gay person, and they're not going to do this, but if every gay person in Texas were to come out, not stand on the street corner and scream, I'm gay, come out just to their mother and fathers, brothers and sisters, aunts, uncles, nephews, cousins, come out to their next door neighbor, come out to the people they work with next door, to the waiter, waitresses at the restaurants they go to, the bus driver they may be, just the people they know every day on a day-to-day basis, and say, hey, you know, we're not talking about gay rights, we're talking about my rights, my individual rights, me. You know, I am your child, I'm your neighbor, I'm your friend, I'm your worker. If every gay person were to do that, that 500,000 would be each probably talking to 5, 6, 10 people. They'd in essence be talking to everybody in the state. Then soon all 13 million people in the state will know personally a gay person. And every poll, every study shows that the people who are on our side are people who know a gay person personally. And that's what some of us are hoping is done in California, is, at least I'm doing it, sure, is calling on every gay person to stand up and tell just the closest people they know, not to make a federal case out of it, just to say, hey, mom and dad, it's me. I know the answer is, well, hey, you know, you don't want to hurt your mother and father. But when your mother and father go in the voting booth, you want them to hurt you.
For sure.
And so that, I think, can be won that way. There are other aspects of the campaigns. There'll be the campaigns that will do the intellectual approach through media and literature, trying to reach those who will be convinced intellectually. There'll be the campaigns that are reached, do emotional campaigns for those people who are reached emotionally. There are the campaigns probably that'll have to fear people into it, you know. Many people feel that one of the reasons the blacks were successful in getting as much as they have in relation to their population in a short time was they burnt down Watts. And people saying, hey, they're going to burn down their own towns and cities. When are they going to burn down ours? So let's give it to them. And then there's going to be the massive outreach effort, the grassroots efforts of reaching out to different groups and getting leaders and everything else to explain to their people, getting union leaders to talk to rank and files, getting blacks to talk to blacks and so forth. It's got to be a multi-level campaign. And if it's done, then I think you can win.
I think it'll be the most grassroots campaign that's been carried on any place in the country. And I understand from some people in St. Paul that there was pretty good mobilization there. If that's the case, then it is not surprising they did a little bit better than in some cities. But it will be very different from the Miami campaign, where it was mostly mass media, very abstract, human rights, which it's a slogan, an abstract slogan. And people rarely met gay people on the streets. There were 3,000 to 5,000 fundamentalists on the streets for two solid months.
See, in Eugene, Oregon...
And no gay people.
In Eugene, Oregon, the last weeks, all of a sudden, everybody had their doorbell rang, and they opened the door, and there was a mother with a little child, and said, "Protect my child," you know. They didn't say that 95% of child molestation is heterosexual, and usually by the parent. And they didn't tell that child abuse is always by the parent. But they did that kind of campaign, and that has to be overcome.
It was graphic, and it was personal.
You know, we have to do the same thing. We have to make it a very personal campaign, and we have to talk about the myths. We cannot not talk, we cannot just say we can't talk about child molestation. We must talk about child molestation. And that child molestation, 95% of it is heterosexual, mostly by the parents. We must talk about model images and role images, that a child's sexual orientation is developed by the age of 2 to 6. We must talk about pornography. That Marquis de Sade was heterosexual, and whatever, within the gay community, we still haven't seen things like Mother of Six performed live sex act. We haven't seen those things yet. So every time they're going to smear us, and I think we must start talking about it now. And the best way to talk about it is the 1-to-1. And so I think it can be one, or a few of us who think it can be one, and we're certainly going to do our best.
Well, looking at the Houston, Texas scene as objectively as possible, and I can't be as objective as I'd like to be in looking at that sort of thing, I'd be willing to assist in the launch of such a defensive campaign against something like Briggs 5-6 years from now, provided we didn't lose everywhere else and that drove people into a fear panic situation. I mean, you haven't said anything here that hasn't been said for 15 years, Harvey.
But they haven't done it. You see, they haven't done it. I'm talking about one thing, coming out. After Dade County, 1 million people came out, you know, I use that figure, who knows how many, and never go back. And we found, most of those found that all those fears of coming out just didn't come true. Oh, yeah, some people lost their jobs. But the greatest number of people found nothing happened. And, like, right now I'm working with some 90 gay doctors and psychiatrists in the Bay Area. People don't realize how many doctors are gay. If they come out, that'll make a change in stereotypes. We've talked about it, but it's never happened. One of the myths that we have in this country is that you know, all gay people come from San Francisco, Hollywood, and New York, right? Like we cloned, you know, off the supermarket shelf. So I'm suggesting that on Gay Day, and maybe you should do it, think about it, doing it at Town Hall.
Town meeting.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm suggesting in San Francisco that on Gay Day, everybody show up with the sign of the town they're born in, you know, to show that we come from all over, that we are their children. The reason everybody thinks that all gay people come from, straight people think that we all come from Hollywood, is that if indeed we came from Hillsboro, Oklahoma, or Madison, Wisconsin, or Rochester, New York, if we came from those places, then there's a possibility, well, then we naturally belong to somebody in those towns and cities, and there's a possibility that the parents own this. You know, we are their children. So in order to avoid that my child is gay, all gay people have to come from San Francisco and Hollywood. And we have to dispel that myth. And if everybody showed up, just say all 6,000, you pack that Astor Arena, wherever it's going to be, with everybody had the signs of the hometown where they were born in, people say, hey, they come all over. We have to dispel the myths. We've never done that. In Miami and in all those other places, we never talked about the myths. The latest, you know, it's like in Miami, the campaign was religious. So we talked about the gymnastics with the Bible. So in Wichita, it was role-playing, you know, and we dispelled that myth. And in Eugene, Oregon, it was gay people choose their lifestyle, and we're dispelling that myth. So we're always on the defensive that way. I say we should take the offensive and talk about those myths now, get them over with. You know,
it's not just personal either, Harvey. I mean, we will if we just went around urging gay people to do the things you've listed, we would lose more massively than any place in the country.
Disagree.
That by itself. It requires, how do you get gay people to do all of those things? It's
well,
not just going
to
happen.
Howard, I have to interject you. You said it requires, how do we get gay people to do it? Yes, that's what we got to get them to do it. How we get them to do it is what you're going to talk about. I think it's got to be done. I think if it's done, we win.
But I'm saying it's not going to be done.
Okay.
It's wishful thinking if we just think, go around, see a neighbor,
sure.
And so on.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to require organization. And we are going to have, I think, very impressive organization.
You're talking about the mechanics of it, and you know, that's a whole different subject.
No, but it's a whole misleading subject I think the gay movement nationally, for certain, and in all these cities you've mentioned, has not had an awareness of. The need for massive grassroots mobilization. Gay people aren't going to come out and just tell their neighbor automatically. They're going to do it only if they feel there's a movement to fall back on or something
on. Yeah, but your end result is the same of getting the gay people to come out and talk one way or another.
But I'm talking about strategy.
Okay,
talking
about strategy. Yeah, that I can't get into.
But I think we need a strategy or we lose disastrously.
Toward that strategy is exactly what Houston Town Meeting is all about.
Right.
Of course, in order to accomplish those goals, we must up front, all of a sudden, provide security from the media for all of those people that will attend. Hopefully, those that came in on the blind non-media access side of the building will leave on the open media access side of the building. I mean, that is certainly a hope. That's why the agenda is structured to deal with issues and strategies to generate confidence, because this fear of folks at home and the people at the office seeing John Smith or Jane Doe's face in front of a camera, this fear is, in my experience and knowledge, not as real as they think it is. And in Harvey's experience,
it grows a lot out of isolation. If you feel you're totally isolated, your fear is going to be, your paranoia will be deeper.
The gay people now know because of Dade County, mm-hmm. and the week before and the week after, more was written about homosexuality than in the history of mankind. Gay people all this country now know they're not alone.
Right.
That we are not one. And that's already there. The
not
marches,
automatically.
The
not
marches,
automatically.
The marches, and the marches and demonstrations reaffirm it. Gay Day in San Francisco, which may be anywhere from 200,000 to 500,000 people, will reaffirm that we're not alone.
That is going to be critical.
But all the strategies are all right. There's no one strategy that's correct. Each strategy is correct for those people who profess it and for where they believe and for those people who react to it. I frankly think there has to be many strategies. There are many different types of people who react different ways. You cannot have one strategy, because that will only reach the people who are reachable through that strategy. Must be many types of strategies. None are wrong. All are right. All must be done. The ultimate decision, every single study, every single poll, every single bit of research says the people who like us are the people who know a gay person. You can't walk away from that fact. You may want to, but that's the ultimate. They got to know a gay person. They got to know we're not green with three heads. They got to know it's their next door neighbor, whoever it is. Whatever way of getting that to happen must happen.
It happens through mass mobilization,
it
I think, more than any
way.
Other means.
More it happens
than
on a one-to-one.
No, but
Howard, I gave a speech in L.A. last week, or 2 weeks ago, and I talked to one person about it, and he went home and told his mother and father. That wasn't a mass mobilization. It was one person. It happens on many ways. You block yourself into the fact that that's your strategy, and I'm not saying your strategy is right or wrong. I think it's right.
It's one particle of my strategy,
but it happens. But don't say it doesn't happen on any other level.
Excuse me, it's been consistently kept from happening in every city where we've lost.
Every single city.
Howard,
the things you're talking about, one-to-one relationships, have been urged. They were urged in Miami. I was down there.
No, they weren't.
I beg your pardon. I was there, Harvey. They were urged consistently in Miami in meetings. But the people had no spirit for the thing, because everything was from the top down.
There wasn't one single ad put out in the mass media urging gay people to come out.
No, not in the ads, no.
That's what I'm talking about. Okay.
You have been listening to a rare recording made by David Lample in his kitchen in Dallas, Texas in 1978. The voices on the tape are Harvey Milk, the slain politician from San Francisco, Howard Wallace, who has long been a peace activist, union organizer, and gay rights activist, and our guest, Ray Hill. Here's more of the recent conversation between Ray Hill and From the Vault producer Christopher Sprinkle.
Can you talk about, because in the materials that I have here in the archives, it's a lot of the train ride, some of the talk leading up to it. We have, of course, the recordings of the day that Harvey Milk and Mayor Moscone had been assassinated. But we don't have a lot of the reasons behind why some of the groups across the country opposed the idea for the march so vehemently, other than talk of if there are not enough numbers, it could possibly be more of a detriment than a positive. Can you elaborate on some of that and why your own feelings initially were against it?
I remember the debates in Philadelphia, and they were pretty pungent. The debate was people march on Washington all of the time, and it doesn't impress anybody, and it doesn't change anything. And if we don't get a large enough crowd, nobody will know that we were there. And they went through this whole rigmarole. But you see, I had experience, as had Brian Coyle, because we were both members of Student Mobilization Committee in the war in Vietnam. I was actually played a significant role in organizing the moratorium march on Washington, probably the largest demonstration until that time that had ever happened. And you don't do marches for them, because they're not going to change. You do marches to reinforce your own troops. What happens in marches is gay people who were basically invisible prior to 1969. Stonewall broke out, but it was a small group of people, and people just didn't have a concept of gay and lesbian people being as large a group of people as we were actually. And so what you do is you run up a flag and you call for an event like a march on Washington, and you get them there, and what happens is they see one another, and they see such numbers that they could not imagine. And that does something to their psyche. And you build the movement from the energy generated. So you actually do marches on Washington not to impress Washington, but to impress your own people. And those people have become so significant as a result of that impression. People left Washington and went back to small towns and colleges and universities and organized and networked, and it grew, and everybody's boat was lifted. Human Rights Campaign, which originally had opposed the whole idea of a march, were there the second march, selling long-distance services for profit to their organization, and you had all kinds of National Gay Task Force membership doubled and trebled, then multiplied its membership by 100 times just months after the march. And so the benefit of the march is internal rather than external. And but a lot of people who had never been in a march or a demonstration didn't understand that. And so most of the opposition, there was that. The other factor was the jealousy among activists. That's the Brian Coyle thing. Brian Coyle was opposed to it because Harvey Milk had called for it, and Brian Coyle had always thought Harvey Milk upstaged him. They're both dead now, and I hope somebody gets that history right.
And so today, what are some of the issues that you're looking at today?
Well, inclusion, of course, is still a minor issue. It's not so much convincing people to accept other people as it once was. Inclusion now is an effort to convince people that they are accepted. And with their courage and participation, the first female Pride Week Grand Marshal is a transgendered person. for the first time in Houston history. And nobody's saying anything about that. It's something that we're all celebrated. I mean, damn, Phyllis is a good activist, and we have a lot of admiration for her activism and her being there. It's time for her to be Grand Marshal. And so we didn't have to create a transgendered Grand Marshal. We just elected Phyllis Ayer, female Grand Marshal, and the incoming president of Houston Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus is a transgendered person. So at least down here, where Mother Hill's role modeling makes a significant difference. I mean, everybody knows me. Everybody knows that I'm the one to call if they're in trouble. And I'm absolute on inclusion. And so instead of these things being struggled for, they are accomplishments for all of us to celebrate. So you have macho man gay guys who are going to the country and western club and to the leather bars to dance and boogie, are dancing and boogieing because a transgendered person has been elected president of the caucus and is grand marshal. And that's my kids are growing up to be the healthy people I intended for them to be.
Finally, I just have to say that it is very rare that I ever get the opportunity to speak to an honest-to-God living legend, and it's been an absolute pleasure being able to work with you on this program and talk with you.
Well, I hope we'll do some more because, I was already 12 years involved when I met Harvey Milk in 1978. What about those years before Stonewall?
We should look at that fight and that struggle and the people involved in that who enabled someone like Harvey Milk to come up through the ranks, because there were a lot of unheralded heroes that had been around before.
And we didn't appreciate those we were heralding. I mean, I went to a conference in 1968 in Chicago, Illinois, and Harry Hay showed up. I knew who Harry Hay was because I had read the books. The other activists knew who Harry Hay was because he was a self-announced communist and had just got back from Eastern Europe. And he was shunned at that meeting. And I was shocked at that, at how Harry Hay, one of the true fathers, the early, early leaders of our movement, was shunned at the National Conference when he got up to say, well, the Eastern European democracies. And Frank Kameny and a bunch of others started booing and hissing that he even used the word democracy in relationship to countries that had, before all other countries in the world, decriminalized homosexual behavior. And that had just happened. And I was there. Those memories deserve preserving.
It was an honor for us here at From the Vault to speak to Ray Hill this week, because memories like his are certainly worth preserving. You've been listening to From the Vault Remembered, a weekly program produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives. For more information on this program, or to find information on how to purchase a copy of this program or any of the archived materials that were used within this week's program, go online at fromthevaultradio.org or call the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. That's fromthevaultradio.org or 800-735-0230. From the Vault is produced, written, and edited by Christopher Sprinkle. Senior producer is Mark Torres. Production coordinator, Edgar Toledo. Outreach by Sean Dulles. Our theme music is courtesy of Los Angeles-based Parallel. For more information on Parallel or other music used within this week's program, please visit fromthevaultradio.org. This program was executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and myself. I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening.